Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to another interview on the CredoCast. Today, I have with me Wade Foster, who is the founder of Zapier. Zapier makes you happier, where we talk about their growth trajectory. We talk about their founding story, but more than that, we talk about how they've grown from just a couple simple integrations and how they got people to pay for those all the way to a team of over 100, fully remote team, and how they're really carving out a new niche and continuing to grow their business, even with minimal marketing to this point. So I think there are a lot of learnings here, and I'm excited to share the interview with you. So without further ado, here is Wade Foster of Zapier.
All right, everyone, welcome back. Today I have with me Wade Foster, who is the founder, CEO of Zapier. I just learned is how it's pronounced. Zapier makes you happier. So Wade is, as I said, is the founder and CEO, and he has built out an awesome company there, obviously with help from a lot of other people as well. And so I'm super happy to have him here with me today to talk about Zapier and really what they've been doing over the last couple of years to really take their business to the next level. They're a company that I've looked up to for a long time that I use. I pay them every month to help me automate a lot of my business. So Wade, welcome. Thanks for being here. And if you would, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and then Zapier.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. So as you know, Zapier, we're a workflow automation company. We help you set up integrations between all the common business tools you use. So if you use things like MailChimp, Trello, Slack, Dropbox, Google Apps, you name it, you can set up integrations and workflows. Yeah. You can set up workflows and integrations to automate any of that sort of stuff. We kind of got our start. So we started back in 2011, and before that, to give you a little more of my background, I was kind of like a self-taught marketer, web developer. Like I did a bunch of technical marketing work, and me and a buddy, Brian, did a lot of freelancing, and we're in a small town, Columbia, Missouri. We'd get asked to do all sorts of just general web work, right? Like help us with this WordPress site or do this MailChimp thing or, you know, just whatever would pay a buck for us, right? We're right out of college and, you know, any money is green money, right? So that's what we would do. And along the way, we would get asked to build integrations from time to time. So we did like a PayPal QuickBooks thing for someone. We did like a WordPress Salesforce thing for somebody. And Brian messaged me one day and was like, you know what? I think we can build a thing that lets folks set this up on their own instead of hiring us. And I was like, oh, that's genius. If people could hook this stuff up, like that would allow them to do all sorts of interesting things. And so we ended up teaming up with another friend, Mike, and just put our heads down, started working nights and weekends like crazy on the Zapier thing to try and get it going. And, you know, 6 years later, here we are.
That's awesome. So you were paying the bills with consulting and then started building this out with your friends.
Yep. More or less.
Wow. That's awesome. And so, and I don't want to dwell on the, you know, on the beginning stories too much, cause I'm sure you've told it a million times. How'd you get your first customers? Were they your consulting clients? And then how did you decide to go, how did you take it from, you know, idea and building it nights and weekends to, you know, where it is now with what, 100 and some employees?
Yep. We started by our first customers came from me mostly outreach to people that seemed to need this thing. So we would find folks on forums that would be talking about like integrations. I remember HiRise had a forum where people would ask for feature requests and was like, when is there going to be a Google Contacts integration? And it was 4 years old with several hundred comments. Mm-hmm. And so it was clear that there wasn't going to be a Google Contacts integration. Right. And so you know, I made a comment like, hey, you could build this yourself with these APIs. Here's some links to the APIs. Or if you want something that's a little easier to use, I'm working on a project that might help you out. Link to how to get in contact with me. And so I would do that across all different forums, just making a similar variant of that comment.
Just straight hustle.
Yeah. And people would message me and say, hey, I really would like this. And I'd say, great. Here's kind of what it's going to look like. Here's kind of what our beta process is. Do you want to go forward with that? And some people would say yes, some people would say no, but we would get a handful of folks. And I remember the very first one was super fun because it was Andrew Warner of Mixergy, who is a guy I'd looked up to for a long time. And he'd left a comment on, I think it was like one of the Stack Exchange sites saying, hey, can someone help me with a PayPal high-rise thing? So I cold emailed him and said, hey, yeah, can you know, you interested in this thing? And he's like, oh, I already solved that, but do you have like a Wufoo AWeber thing? We didn't, but I said, oh yeah, of course we do. Yeah. And he was like, great, I would love that. So I was like, Brian, Mike, we got to build Wufoo AWeber right now. So we built it that night. And awesome. The next day I messaged him and he was like, great, how much money do I owe you? And I was like, I don't really know. And so I was like, $100. And he's like, great, how do I pay you? And I was like, oh crap. Here's my PayPal address.
And he's had a PayPal account. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we had our first customer. So it was very much just, it was very hacky. Totally not like the official way business is to do stuff, but you can't like when you're just starting, you don't have any of those luxuries. You just kind of gotta work your way to it. And that's kind of what you're doing early on.
Absolutely. Yeah. If there's one thing that I've learned, you know, I've been working for myself for 2.5 years now, and my starting story is very similar in terms of I got in a lead that I couldn't take and it was perfect fit for Buddy's agency. I emailed him and I was like, hey, would you be willing to pay $50 for this like introduction? He's like, yeah, I know the business. What's your PayPal? 3 minutes later, $50 in my account, made the intro and they made, you know, thousands of dollars off of it. So I sold it for way cheap, but you know, you just start and go from there. So there's no like set way that people really start businesses.
Yeah.
Bootstrappers, everyone's just like, I tried this thing and it worked and I kept pushing on it, right?
Yeah.
Which is awesome and a great way to build a business. So Andrew was your first customer or first customer that paid you, which is hilarious that you found on Stack Overflow as well. I found so many like, I haven't come across Andrew, but I came across like Michael Hyatt in WordPress forums like 7 years ago asking how to do something. I was like, why is this guy writing, like trying to write WordPress code himself? I respect Michael a lot, but that's really funny. So you've gone from Andrew being your first paying customer, charging $100 for this integration that you already built for him overnight. How many customers do you guys have now?
Let's see. We've got about 100,000 customers today and 2 million plus users.
2 million plus users, 100,000 paying customers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And across all different levels, I'm sure not everyone's paying $10 like I am.
So
you have a really good business. So that's taking you, what, let's do the math, 6 years taking you to get to 100,000 paying users, 2 million users.
Mm-hmm.
So what were the, if you could and just riff on it, what were the major things that got you to this point? Like what were kind of the step changes that you're like, okay, we're kind of flatlining and then you do something and all of a sudden it like takes off? Or there haven't been any of those things. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. There's not a ton of like step function changes. And even like step function changes are kind of like a myth. You do have things that accelerated a little bit, but there's not a lot that are just like, you know, we were plodding along and then we tweaked this thing and like, now it's amazing. Right. Like you tweak this thing and it's like a little better and you tweak this other thing. It's a little better. And then you tweak this other thing and you're like, oh wow, that one was actually really good. But it's never like,
and
you
all
know,
six of those in aggregate add up, but
So for us, you know, the first year was the three of us just like heads down, like trying to make it work and get this thing rolling. You know, making a little bit of money, but not really enough to make a really much of a living, to be honest.
Sure.
A kind of a key inflection point for us was we built the first like 50 integrations on the platform ourselves, so just kind of like through brute force getting to where we were. And then we got an email from Aaron, the CEO at Box, saying, hey, why is Box not on Zapier? And we realized, hey, if a company like that cares enough to be on Box, like maybe, or to be on Zapier, then maybe there's an opportunity for us to ask him to do the work himself. Like he's got a fleet of engineers that might be willing to go to bat for this. And so,
and you're like, that's question, why isn't it on Zapier? Do you want it on Zapier?
Yeah. It's like, there were three of us. Work? We just haven't gotten to it. Right. So we built the first version of our developer platform in 2012, and that was like a big difference because now we started getting lots of apps coming from the broader ecosystem, and it wasn't entirely dependent on us to do that work. And so we got to that point where the demand was high enough that folks were knocking on our door. So that was a big change for us.
That's like a year in, right?
Yeah, about a year in, a little less than a year in, but right around that.
Yeah, that's great.
And then not too shortly after that, we hired our first employee. And that was like a big change. You know, you start, you know, you have to have like books and payroll and like all that sort of stuff, which is every business that ends up being like
we have we have money in the bank account, let's split it three ways, right?
That's yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a totally different thing. So that was and you're also like managing a person, even though when you hire one person, it definitely doesn't feel like you're managing them. It's just like it's more of just a relationship. Yeah. Like true management didn't come until much later for us, but it's still somebody that you're like, you know, I could technically fire this person if I decided that they weren't doing well. And that's different than maybe your co-founder relationships. So that was certainly a big change for us.
And what did that allow you to do? Outside of like just having more hands on deck. But
the biggest thing we needed was at that point in time, I was waking up and doing customer service from the moment I woke up until about 2 or 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And that's how long it took me to just get through the backlog of support questions.
Wow.
And so we just needed
everything
help
from, hey, this integration isn't working, to how do I build this integration on your developer platform, all that stuff.
Exactly. And so we just needed help answering customer questions. It wasn't that I didn't want to do that. It was that I was just doing too much of it. I think it's very important that you continue to have exposure to customer support, but I needed to take my learnings from customer support and apply them to the business and actually spend time fixing stuff.
Right.
So that was a big inflection point for us. I'm trying to think when the next one came around. Probably the next most important inflection point came around, I want to say around 20 people or so. So that was that was when we first had to start doing real management. Less than that, like everyone kind of knows what everybody else is doing. Everyone knows each other really well. And you just kind of, everything just goes in one direction sort of magically. And around 20 people, like you have to start paying attention to like career paths and career development, not a ton, but just a little, like some of those stuff start to bubble up and you have to make sure that everyone is kind of, there's some coordination overhead. You know, I was less aware of some of the stuff that was happening in engineering at that point. So I was like, hey, Brian, can you own more of this engineering stuff? Cause like, I'm not good at it. And like, you know, you're way better at it anyway. So
you
like,
start kind of defining out roles.
Exactly. Like we kind of had de facto roles, but like, you know, we started just being a little more defined about it. So that was a big change. And then two things kind of happened at once about a year after that, which was we had a big fundamental change in the product, probably the biggest fundamental change we've ever had, which was we added multi-step Zap. So it was before you could just have a single trigger and a single action. When we added multi-steps, you could have many actions on it, which opened up a whole new set of use cases for Zapier, which really helped from like a growth and differentiation standpoint. So we started having a ton more customers come in, which was amazing.
That's what got me paying you, by the way. Once you launched multi-step Zaps, I was like, done, game over.
Yeah, it really does. It like, it takes it from like this nice thing to like, oh wow, I can build like full back office processes with this thing.
Yeah.
And so it really was a game changer for a lot of our customers. And right around that same time, we had a couple things kind of happen in right in row. So we launched that. We had a huge influx of new customers, about like a 60% increase in signups on a week over week basis. And it stayed that high. Like usually when you do feature launches, it's kind of a spike and then it like goes back down. But for us, it like just spiked and then stayed there. So that was crazy.
Wow.
And the part that was really tough was, again, customer support, because you get a 60% increase in users, and that's probably about a 60% increase in tickets and questions. And we had had a support – we had six people on our support team. One just went on parental leave, so we're down to five. And now we had a 60% increase in questions from users. So we'd always had this philosophy from a hiring standpoint, don't hire till it hurts, which I think is a fantastic – strategy for early companies, because you know then when you're hiring someone, they are going to do this job that really is painful for us to try and get done. And so it really makes it a good cash flow management strategy, and also a really good onboarding strategy, because you're not going to have a lot of people just twiddling their thumbs. But at that point in time, we realized, wow, we had gotten behind the eight ball on hiring for customer support. And it takes, knowing then, it was like, you know, it takes us like a couple months to find a person, then it takes us a couple months to train them up. And so we are now behind by like three or four people, and we're probably like 3 or 4 months out from actually having those people in the door.
Yeah.
So we started getting, especially on the customer support side, less so in other parts of the business, but customer support, we really changed our motto, which is like, we need to start forecasting our demand and our growth to make sure that we have proper staff on board to handle the growth of the company. So that don't hire till it hurts thing, we kind of were like, yeah, maybe that strategy that served us well, we should probably tweak it a little bit. And then along with that, this was about around 40 people as well. We added it in like a real, like kind of full management suite. So like we promoted our first person in support to kind of like head of support. And he started managing all the support teams. We had someone manage all of our, the marketing team, the budding marketing team. We promoted, we hired someone external to grow our platform team. Mm-hmm. So like you started to have like more of a traditional management structure, which was a really important change. And for me, this was a, this was probably an area I was weakest in, to be honest. Coming into to this, I'd never managed before. I'd never been a part of like the most companies I'd spent time with were small, relatively small, like 10 people or less. I had a short stint at like a 800 person company, but not long enough to really pick up on, you know, how big companies organize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I had to start learning what does it take to be just a good manager, period. Mm-hmm. And there was this podcast, the Manager Tools podcast, which is a little corporate-y, but is fantastic. It like just gives
really
you
good.
Yeah, it just is like no nonsense. Here's the words you say to a person to give them feedback so that they don't freak out that the CEO is giving them feedback. And it's like, oh, that is easy. I can say that stuff. And you know, you just I find the first time managers have like a bit of a, sometimes you have these weird misconceptions about what a good manager looks like or what a bad manager looks like based on who your own previous managers are. Mm-hmm. And you may not have had a good manager, so you might be like mimicking stuff that was kind of weird.
Right.
And so the Manager Tool podcast just gave me like a great framework for how to think about this is what good management looks like. And it just made a ton of sense for me. So we just started rolling that out to everyone and made sure that anyone who was in a management function understood, hey, this is how we're gonna do management. It's Zapier.
This is the Zapier way of management.
More or less. So that was a big that all three of those things happened like right in a row, and it was like kind of that was like a pretty stressful period of time, because I remember, you know, I'd show up at work that day and I'd do a full days of work, and then I'd eat some dinner real quick, and then I would just jump on customer support and do customer support through the evening, because we had so much support coming in. And I was like, I don't want our support team to quit because there's so much volume coming in. Right. So I'm going to do whatever's in my capabilities to try and share the burden with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it took us about 4 months to really get through that. And we got through it and no one quit. Like everyone, it was exciting too, though, because like we have this new feature, people love it. Like, yeah, it was a lot of work, but it was like the kind that's exciting. It's like, oh my God, this is winning. Like we made something that is really fun. So
definitely
stressful, but like in the way that, in the best way possible.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question there. You jumped in, obviously you did support at first, hired someone, hired a team, and then you jump back in again here. Would you in retro, and how long ago was that?
This was in 2016. Yeah.
16. Yeah. Yeah. I remember when you launched, cause I was already working for myself. Would you do that again? Would you jump in and do support like that again?
Absolutely. I think you know, as a CEO, you got to do, you sometimes you got to get in the trenches and help. And I think the thing that was really important there was folks saw me doing all the interviews and all the hiring during the day. So they knew that I was working on trying to build the team and pull that stuff in there. But, you know, in the evenings when, you know, people aren't going to do interviews and stuff, I was in there just like everyone else saying, hey, like, let's take care of our customers. This is really important. And so I think it goes a long way when you're going through like these tougher times. And in our case, this is like the good kind of tough. To say like, yeah, we're all in this together. Like, I'm not going to ask you to do anything that I'm not willing to do on my own.
Totally. That makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like you also messaged it Because sometimes I've found employees can feel like you don't trust them because you're jumping in. And it's important to message it as like, you're doing a phenomenal job. You know, we have so much going on right now. Like, you know, I'd like to jump in and, you know, and help out just because like we need additional hands on deck sort of thing.
Yeah. And for us, it was the kind of situation where like, I can certainly, I have had times where I've had to learn that lesson of like, when's the right time to jump in.
Yeah.
But there's a point where the workload gets so heavy that like people kind of just egos go out the door and it's just like all hands on deck. Like,
Doesn't matter.
It just, yeah, it's like, look, there's just so much that it, you know, even if like someone was doing amazing, like killing it at their job, it just didn't make that much of a dent. You literally just need more people to more hands to help.
Right.
And that was the kind of situation we were in at that point in time.
Cool. That's awesome. And it sounds like you kind of go from like Wade, the CEO during the day to like Wade, the customer support manager, to like in the evening.
Yeah.
Cause you just had to do it. And that probably also like helped you out a lot in the business as well with like the vision of the business. Cause you're actually hearing these are the challenges going on. And because you're there up top, sometimes, as we all know, sometimes stuff doesn't go from, you know, the first line of defense up to the CEO or up to like the VP or something like that.
Yeah. And that's a big reason I still do a support shift every week. Every Friday afternoon, I get in and answer tickets from customers because it helps me just see what folks like and don't like about the business and the product.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. And it sounds like you've found that to be super valuable.
Yeah. I wouldn't change it for anything. In fact, we have everybody do that. Everybody at Zapier does a 4-hour shift every week in support just to stay close to the customer.
Yep. That's amazing. I really respect that. And I read something similar. So Zapier is a remote company, right? You guys are 100% remote. Do you have any people that are like in the same city as each other?
We have a handful. There's like a bit of a competition right now with Austin and Portland to try and have the highest head count there, which is kind of a weird competition.
Yeah, it is.
But I think there's like 10 or so in both of those cities.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. So have you, I love this conversation because it's so different from other conversations I've done on here. So how did you come to the and it actually really interests me because I'm building out a remote team. I have three part-time people working with me that are all remote. I actually just hired one here in Denver, but I work from home. She's not going to work from here. So how did you come to that decision of building a remote company? And how do you think that has played into your growth? And what has that allowed you to do?
Yeah, I think it was part like just circumstances for us. It wasn't like a big strategic decision at the beginning where it was like, oh, should we do an office or should we do remote? You know, we had the Brian, Mike, and I had all moved to California for Y Combinator in 2012. And then at the end of that, Mike was moving back to Missouri. Yeah, for Zapier.
Okay. I didn't know that.
At the end of that, Mike was moving back to Missouri because his then girlfriend, now wife, was wrapping up law school. And so, you know, we're not going to kick him out of the company because he, you know, wants to go back home.
Yeah.
Like that seems silly. And we'd worked like, you know, this is a thing we were doing on nights and weekends. So we got used to like working via like chat and pull requests and Trello and stuff like that. So to us, like an office didn't feel like a necessary thing to win. And then another thing that added to that decision was when we started to hire that first support person, we had never hired people before. This was the first time having experience hiring. And we weren't good at it, to be honest. And so we asked around for some advice and folks were like, they're like, well, just hire people you worked with in the past. Like you, if you know them well, you know their work styles, you know, if you can collaborate well, like that's probably like a pretty safe thing to do. And none of the people we knew were in the Bay Area because we were new there. So of course we didn't know anyone. But one of my old roommates who was running a massive Chicago Cubs forum, he was moderating it. I was like, you know, if he can handle Chicago Cubs fans, he can probably handle some customer support stuff.
Yeah.
I reached out to him and said, hey, you want to team up on this Zapier thing? And he's like, yeah. And he was in Chicago. So it, like, we just started getting people where they were, and that was a really good early hiring strategy for us. And then over time, we realized, we started to get more of the benefits that you traditionally see cited with remote work. So things like recruiting benefits are massive for us today because we're able to hire from a pool of people anywhere in the world. So that wasn't something that we thought like really long and hard about at the beginning, but in hindsight was totally worth it.
Yeah. It's kind of a competitive advantage as well, because you can just grow that much faster. If you're pulling from a smaller pool, it's harder to find the right person versus if you can just open it up and say like whole United States or whole world.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah,
exactly. Totally.
Interesting. And so how do you organize like, you know, your teams, how do you organize your teams, but what are the things that you guys do as a company to kind of make sure that everyone's staying on the same path?
Yeah. Great question. So number one, I think a strong, like management culture is really important. So all of our managers do one-on-ones with the people every single week. And so, you know, when you're working remotely, you have a person that you can go to every week and talk about stuff, stay glued in with the company. And so that helps bring some sort of like humanity and, you know, cohesion to the company on a very regular cadence. We have a code of conduct, but we don't really police Slack too heavily. So like all of our channels are public and we let people just go solve problems, like go take care of whatever needs to be to happen. And so that starts to build up a lot of camaraderie. People are poking into different channels, helping across the company. You know, you'll see like a support person, you know, jump into a marketing channel and say, hey, we've got this opportunity that came in our inbox, or, you know, marketing folks will be pointing out stuff to our engineers based on a site. Like there's like this real good cross functionality that happens from that, which is important. We also have like a set of off-topic channels are all prefixed with fun in Slack. So it's like, yeah, fun amateur radio, fun book club, like fun whatever like hobby you have. And so, and, you know, I think if you're in an office using Slack, people are like, get rid of the off-topic stuff. Like Slack is for serious business. But in a remote team, you really need like an outlet for like just water cooler stuff. And so we think that that's an important way for people to get to know each other and build those relationships. And those friendships that then when serious stuff happens, you kind of have like this shared camaraderie that like you can handle more difficult problems together, which is important. A couple other things we do too. We do like pair buddy chats. So once a week you get randomly paired up with somebody in the company and you'll just jump on a call like this and just talk about whatever. It doesn't have to be work. Just get to know somebody. Right. And then we also do big retreats. So twice a year, we do an all-hands retreat, fly everybody in together, and have kind of like just a big celebration of the last 6 months, plan some stuff for the next 6 months, and enjoy each other's company. Those types of things are the stuff we've done to make sure that remote feels it feels like you're working with other people, basically, and not kind of like off in your own island.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you're collaborating, you're getting to know people's personalities even, and then you have that in-person like face-to-face time every like 6 months.
Yep.
That's cool. And you just had a retreat, right?
Yeah, we just came back from we were in Hilton Head in the end of January.
Nice. South Carolina. Yeah.
Yep. South Carolina. Yep.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Very cool. East Coast boy over here. I've been to Hilton Head a bunch.
Yeah. We had a few folks on the team who I guess that was a normal vacation spot growing up. Yeah. I'd never been there.
it's cool. That's really awesome. So one of the things that we haven't talked about yet, which I feel like we should talk about briefly, is like you talked about I love that you've talked about these different linchpins like and grow things that you've done. And you haven't mentioned marketing. Mm. Like at all. we were talking which is amazing. And we were talking before you even got on here about like some of the stuff you guys are doing. So I guess I'd like to hear real quick, what are the more like traditional marketing activities, right? That you guys have like worked on and thought about that have, you know, that have made a difference, in your business and that maybe that you're going to keep like pushing on harder.
Yeah. Good question. So for us, the big thing, the linchpin for us was our partnerships. So that was like the thing we leaned heavy on. And it was really good for us who were kind of, especially as like engineering driven, like founders and product driven founders, it was nice to have a thing that was like producty that could drive marketing instead of having to like learn how to do a bunch of marketing related activities. So, you know, we would
and
build
spin
these
up
integrations.
A brand story and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah exactly. So for us, it was let's build an integration. Let's reach out to the company and say, hey, we built this cool thing. Can we tap in? Like, will you help us promote this? And ask them, you know, would you send a newsletter out? Will you put a landing page up in your app directory that talks about it? That kind of stuff. And those types of things would end up driving lots of traffic back to our site. And then, you know, alongside that, we also had our own landing pages that showcase the integrations, and those would get, you know, indexed by Google, and search traffic will come in that way. But really the linchpin was every time we could get a new partner, that opened up a new market segment for us and a new set of customers that could potentially use us. And then tapping into those user bases and trying to get, you know, those partnerships to talk about how this thing could help them, help their users out. And so that for us allowed us, when we were a tiny, tiny little company with like zero marketing budget, to kind of punch above our weight class a little bit.
Yeah, totally. Because you were able to basically, like, you were doing all the giving ahead of time, but you build this integration.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, this is awesome. Like, why wouldn't we promote it? Because it's going to help out our, you know, our career. Yeah. I'm sure you had some that were like, nah, we're good. But yeah. I would assume for the most part, they're like, yeah, absolutely. This sounds great.
Yeah. I'd say 80% of the time folks were like, cool, yeah, we'll definitely do something. You know, we didn't always get everything that we asked for, right? Like, we wanted them to email every single user and tell them about it. We wanted them to put it in their onboarding sequences. Like, sometimes they would say no to requests like that, but sometimes they would just be like, sure, we'll do all of it. And it'd be like, great.
Yeah. that's really cool. And it seems like, so you've been able to do that and you kind of had that like growth channel working, where like as you basically point to build new integration, reach out to the companies we integrated with, or let the ones, if it's like an integration to one that you already had, let them know that like, hey, Trello, now we integrate with Box or whatever. Right. And so you kind of get that keeps on coming.
Exactly.
As well,
the gift that
keeps
on
giving.
Exactly.
And,
you know, and then over time, like, so we were building the integrations early on, but, you know, then we swapped to have the developer platform where folks were building integration for us. And then that gave us even more leverage because we could start saying things like, oh, if you want to be public on Zapier, we're going to need you to do these marketing activities in exchange to be listed on it. So, you know, over time we were able to, you know, where we could extract just a little leverage to make sure that, like, things were done in a way that we knew would be successful for both companies. And so that was like a thing that we've gotten better at over time of understanding, hey, like, let's, if we all commit to doing these activities, this is going to go really well. And if you're not going to commit to it, then, like, you know, maybe we shouldn't partner up on this. Like,
right. Yeah. And then you're totally like, and you're totally okay with that because you had a group of people, you knew someone else would build it or you could, y'all could build it. Right.
Yeah.
And it just like, wasn't going to be something that was there. It just kind of sits there and someone asks about it and you're like, oh, we don't really like talk about that integration. Cool. So I guess my last question for you is, what's something that y'all did at Zapier, either early on or, you know, in more recent times as you've gotten bigger, that you wouldn't do again?
That we wouldn't do again. Well, I mean, early on, all the customers came from me getting on those forums and like answering questions and stuff like that. I haven't done that in years because like it just does not really scale. Like it was super nice to get like a lot of customers coming from that, but it definitely was not a thing that we could continue doing. There's a whole bunch of other stuff, like things that we've tried that we've not been able to crack. So for us, like things like video, like we haven't really done much with like YouTube and stuff like that. Like I feel like there's something for us there, but we haven't cracked that nut, to be honest. A lot of social channels, like we kind of have a token presence there, but we don't do great at them, to be honest. So like, again, I think there's probably a strategy there that does work for us, but we haven't figured it out, but also we haven't really taken the time to figure it out because we're spending, I think this is the most important thing with marketing too, is we're spending time in the channels that are working for us. It's like, if we find something that works, we know if we double our efforts there, we're going to extract even more efforts rather than kind of like carving off extra time to go experiment on like this, you know, maybe channel. It's like, if we spend more time to double a thing that's already pulling in 1,000 sessions a month, that's going to be way better than getting like a killer thing on this new channel that pulls in 10 sessions, right? Like, it's just nothing. Right. So for us, I think it's really important to focus in on your winners and be okay with like other hip popular channels, like just not really having a presence there. Like in time, yeah, maybe we will figure that stuff out. But for now, like we're fine letting them kind of pass us by.
Yeah, totally. And that's kind of the goal, or at least as a marketer, like with a company where you can reach the point where you go, okay, these channels are working and we're going to keep pushing on them. We're going to have people operating them and optimizing and, you know, mm-hmm. and searching to grow them. But then you can also bring someone in to be like, all right, let's crack you. I agree. There is something there for you on YouTube, but you just don't have hands on deck, right? So then you can afford to invest a bit more in like, okay, like what could be another like channel that we could open up, you know, that will join these other like two or three, but to a certain point, it's like, you only need two. You only need one channel that works.
Yeah. And you look at most businesses that really make it, it tends to be like one dominant channel that gets them there.
Yeah, totally. I know Dan Martell, who I'm sure you know of, mm-hmm. he talks about one channel, one service or one price point. Where mm-hmm. basically like at the beginning, it's like find the one channel that works and just press so hard on that, you know, find like have one offering and people pay mm-hmm. you for that. And don't get too fancy from the start. So
it makes your decisions so much easier. It's like there's like at the beginning you have so much to do that it's very mm-hmm. important to like reduce your like decision fatigue a little bit.
Yes, totally. I wish I had done that. I started off with too many like mm-hmm. options, like this level is this much and this level is this much, and then now it's like you can either go here or you can go here. And by the way, the second one like is invite only, so really you can go here and then invite you. And it's just like the overhead, or just the mental overhead that reduces is absolutely incredible.
Totally.
Cool. Well, Wade, thank you for your time. This has been awesome. I know I've learned a bunch. I had a few questions I wanted to ask you specifically, and I got to ask them. This has been fantastic. So if you would, tell us, where can people find your company online? And I know you're hiring as well. So if you want to plug that, go for it.
Yeah. So Zapier.com, Zapier.com. You can find our jobs page, Zapier.com/jobs. We're hiring for almost every type of role. So if you're in marketing, product, engineering, like we probably have a spot for you. So definitely reach out if you're interested in some of the stuff we're doing.
Let me ask one question there. Do you have a Zapier.com/happier page?
Oh, we should.
Oh,
we
you need should. To get one. Yeah, you need to build
That's
that.
Great. Oh, man. Great idea. Whew, missing opportunities left and right. Get back to everybody in both places once I have a chance. So
awesome. And if you send in a support request on Friday afternoon, there's a decent chance they might get you, right?
Yeah, you might get me answering your support request. So
awesome. Well, Wade, thanks so much. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. I appreciate it.